We need you now. One generous Marketplace fan, Dr. Joe Rush from Florida, is offering to match the next $50,000 in donations to Marketplace. And every single gift gets us closer to a critically important May fundraising goal. Give right now and double your impact thanks to this generous match. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
China puts a ban on Japanese aquatic imports in a row over radioactive water. Hello, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne. A very good morning to you. Japan is releasing treated radioactive water from its Fukushima nuclear plant into the Pacific Ocean. There's been plenty of opposition from several of its neighbours, including China. And now China has slapped a ban on any aquatic goods originating from Japan. The BBC's Japan correspondent Shamaya Khalil explains.
This is the water that's been used for years now, for 12 years or so, to cool the melted reactors that were destroyed in the 2011 tsunami disaster that led to the nuclear meltdown. This water itself becoming radioactive has been treated and stored in over 1,000 tanks. Now, there's so much of it now, 1.3 million tons, that the tanks have reached capacity and it needs somewhere to go. The government deems it safe. The scientists and experts have deemed it safe. TEPCO, the company that runs the plant, have said that this water has gone through a process of treatment and dilution. The water is not entirely radiation-free because it will contain radioactive isotopes that are very difficult to remove from water. And yet, they say that with the dilution, the fact that it's going to be pumped into the ocean, the concentration is going to be well below safety standards. And even though Japan has offered all of these studies, if you will, and reports, Japan has a lot of convincing to do here inside the country and for its neighbors. We're not very far from the nuclear plant, and we're also next to a fishing port. Now, the fishing season hasn't started yet, but we've managed to stop one fisherman who said, look, you know, we've been told not to speak. But we've been here several times, and the fishermen that did speak to us say they're already suffering reputational damage. Nobody wants to buy the fish. And remember, they've suffered that after the initial disaster. So they feel that this is a second disaster for them. The perception of what's happening in the ocean is hugely damaging to Fukushima itself and its reputation.
That was Shamaya Khalil reporting. Now, let's do the numbers. Australian airline Qantas posted its first annual profit since the pandemic, posting a $1.1 billion profit for the year to June. And Asian stocks are up after the US's purchasing manager index fell, which could mean interest rates won't stay higher for longer. And the markets, they like that. Now, we said we'd keep an eye on this one for you. And India made history as the fourth nation to achieve a soft landing on the lunar surface. And now its rover has gone in search of water on the moon. The achievement is even more impressive given the high failure rate in recent missions, including Russia's Luna 25, which crashed on Sunday. Let's hear from the BBC's India business correspondent Archana Shukla, who is right in the middle of all the action.
It was pin drop silence seconds before Vikram lander touched on the South Pole surface on the moon. This planetarium here, full of people waiting for that moment, burst out, clapping, hugging each other, distributing sweets, and also chanting patriotic slogans because India created history, and it was a proud moment here for Indians who were watching this historic moment. I have some of the astronomy enthusiasts here who were watching that moment. And Mr. Sanjay, you were also here clapping actively. Yes. And I saw you having sweets. A lot and distributing it. Yes. Proud moment as an Indian now?
Exactly, proud moment. And the legacy Nehru put of scientific attitude that has given us this opportunity to celebrate. And ISRO-like institutions are creating history. And for India, it is great. And particularly for youth. Now, they will be going for science background education.
That was Archana Shukla reporting. President Joe Biden has called China's economy a ticking time bomb, and there have been a series of ominous indicators lately. Prices have begun falling, exports are down, and youth unemployment has risen above 21%. The BBC's Ed Butler reports.
I want to find a job, and I have passed like 20 written tests, but I haven't got any offer for the interview.
This is Alex. She's 24, a recent graduate with a kind of top-tier college education that used to guarantee you entry into all kinds of top jobs, but not anymore.
Sometimes when you have like reject email, you feel like, if my whole education is worth it, like I have so many years to study in the university, in the schools, and eventually I can't find a job.
You can understand the frustration. Recent figures suggest that more than one in five young Chinese are now out of work. That's twice as high as the US or many European countries. Here at Beijing's Lama Buddhist Temple, the biggest in northern China, record numbers of young people are now coming to burn incense and bow their heads. Like these two young graduates, Zhang and Du Ziyong, they're praying for work.
All my friends say Lama Temple is very effective for prayers, for things like career advancement or school admissions. Many of my friends have seen their wishes have come true if they pray here. So we all come to pray.
I've taken 3 postgraduate entrance exams over 3 years. I haven't found a job. It's been almost 2 years that I've been looking. I think many people come here just to pray because they haven't got a job.
China has been a powerhouse of global industry for many years now. Nearly a third of the world's consumer goods are made here. But even exports from ports like this one are now falling, and domestic consumers just aren't able to make up the difference. Michael Pettis is a professor of economics based at Peking University in the Chinese capital, and he says that China urgently needs to refocus its spending to support regular citizens.
You could, for example, double pensions. You could eliminate, for example, subway fees. If you want households to spend more, you have to give them a bigger share of what they produce. If you want to resolve the debt problem, and China may have the worst debt problem of any major economy, somebody has to bear the cost of that debt.
Is there going to be a crash in China? I mean, what's the result of this debt pile you're describing?
No, what you're describing, you could sort of call the Anglophone model, where when we have a debt problem, we tend to resolve it in the form of a crisis. It's very politically and socially painful, but it resolves itself relatively quickly. The alternative version, which we saw in the Soviet Union in the 1970s or in Japan in the 1990s, is you basically resolve the problem over a very long period of time. That can be economically much more costly, but politically and socially, at least in the short term, it's much less costly. I think that China is more likely to have a Japanese-style adjustment than an American or British-style adjustment.
So China's looking at several lost decades, potentially?
I think so.
Well, that's not the official view, of course. The Chinese government says it does have a plan to stimulate demand, but details remain sketchy. All of this means that the path to a good job for unemployed graduates like Alex could be a long time coming. I'm the BBC's Ed Butler for Marketplace.
And I'm Leanna Byrne with a Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.